The royal family was entirely there, including the emperor. The Senate was there. The elite guards troops were present. The Metropolitan of Moscow led the service. Cannons thundered overhead. Never, Herzen said, remembering this moment, have, in his words, the gallows been celebrated with such pomp. And he described his inward reaction to this event. There, on the spot, before that altar defiled by bloody rites, I swore to avenge the murdered men and dedicated myself to the struggle with that throne, with that altar, with those cannon. In fact, in the life of many intelligenti, we find these similar moments of a conversion, consecration to the cause, essential to the spirit and the definition of the intelligentsia. Now, historically, the key period in which one really sees the emergence of this group of critically minded, dissident, educated Russians was the 1830s and the 1840s, time of Nicholas I. This was also a time in which this intelligentsia, at its very birth, and this would last throughout its history, split into two major currents. One of them was called Westernizers, or Zapadniki in Russian, and the others Slavophils, Slavyanophili. Terms, by the way, which were not used by themselves, they were coined by each other, they were meant to be slightly mocking and exaggerated, and therefore one should be cautious in reading too much into those as accurate descriptions of these movements. But they're telling, as you'll see. There are, in fact, real differences between these groups, and I'll be discussing these differences in a moment, but these differences should not be overstated, should not be exaggerated. For one thing, they all knew each other personally. They liked each other. They were mainly from the same small social class. At this point, the intelligentsia was primarily from the nobles, though not all. And they were indeed educated noblemen, mainly young. And they were friends. They visited one another. They ate together. They drank together. They went to each other's salons and circles and weddings. They argued together. They were part of the same group of people in Moscow and Petersburg mostly. Most importantly, though, they shared certain essential beliefs, certain essential values, a certain outlook and sensibility, what one might call a romantic group culture. And two points about this. First of all, they shared a common philosophical outlook. Westernizers and Slavophiles both were deeply influenced by German romantic philosophers, especially Schelling and Hegel. And German philosophy, which they all read, and usually in the original German, taught educated Russians many different things. But I want to emphasize one because it really is the most essential for thinking about this shared philosophical outlook. For the German idealists, who they greatly admired, the 18th century rationalists were wrong to view the world in mechanical terms, as separate elements that fit together in some rational manner, that fit together functionally, like a clock. A favorite metaphor in the 18th century of rationalists. Rather, they said, the German idealists said, the world is organic, it's whole. And to understand the world, one has to understand not how it works, that's the sort of rationalist approach, but its inner essence, its spirit, its purpose, what it is in its very nature. Or to use their own language, one needed to seek the manifestations of the absolute in the world, or the spirit of the world, Geist in German, Duch in Russian, the idea of the time. In other words, truth was to be found not with the help of the tools of mechanical reasoning, but with instinct and emotion, with the senses. All of this is extremely important in the life of the Russian intelligentsia in the 1830s and 40s, really shaped how they approached the world in many ways. First of all, this meant discovering where oneself fit into the grand unified scheme of things, one's calling and purpose in life, how one felt fit in to the absolute, to the spirit of the age. It's really hard to exaggerate how important this was to them. Think of Herzen swearing to avenge the murdered Decembrists by fighting autocracy. He had found a place for himself in the grand cosmos of things. Secondly, it meant discovering what Russia's place was in this great totality. What was Russia's calling, its purpose, its mission? We saw early signs of this already in the Decembrists, and their sensibility becomes much more intense by the 1830s.